Hey everyone, welcome to the Mass Construction Show. I'm your host, Joe Kelly, and this is a podcast about all things construction in Massachusetts and beyond. Today's episode is going to be about concrete, my thoughts on concrete and what the future holds for it, as well as a few other things. For starters, my apologies, we're late this week. It's not that we don't have the content, it's that this guy can't keep up with getting it out. I am looking forward to today's episode. I am also pretty excited about Greg Procopio, who will be coming up shortly that you'll hear about. We also have an interesting panel discussion that I'll share and some stuff on energy moving forward. So I'm pretty excited about a lot of the topics we have coming for you. We have the content. It is recorded, ready to go. Just this guy can't get it up. So actually, poor turn of phrase there, right? So today, this episode, it's going to be kind of a follow-up with, a follow-up on the conversation that we had with Professor John Cribbs on the sand shortage. If you'd like to listen to that episode, I'll put a link in the show notes so you can go back and hear the whole thing. But for now, I'll just give you a quick little recap on what that episode was. So the recap is that sand that we use for concrete, glass, microchips, and many other things is in short supply. And many people would think about sand and think about, okay, we have these miles of beaches. I don't know how many square miles. It probably should be a bigger unit of measure of deserts, right? So we have all the sand and everyone thinks that it's probably not a problem. But in reality, the issue is the shape of the sand matters, right? So smooth windblown sand from the desert is not usable for concrete. It needs to be angular and not smooth and round. That type of sand is in short supply. There are countries right now that are importing sand. There is black markets for sand. There's illegal dredging going on. All those things, for the most part, though, are economical, except for the illegal dredging. That kind of straddles both sides of the issue. But for the most part, those are economic issues. But the environmental impacts are as bad, if not worse. The sand issue is a long story, though. And if you want to hear more about that, I would just go ahead and listen to the episode with John Cribbs, or I would go to 99% Invisible. And they did a great episode on sand as well. So I just wanted to give you that quick recap. There is currently a sand shortage. It has to do with the type of sand. It's causing people to do things, especially particular countries in the U.S. I believe we're pretty good, but to do illegal things and do things that are harming the environment to get a hold of sand, because these developing nations really need to build infrastructure and buildings and an economy. So that's just the backstory in a nutshell. But go listen to that whole thing. There's so much more to it that I can't really recap it that well for you. Now, why am I resurfacing this this sand issue? Well, I have an observation. My observation is that concrete as a building material is under pressure. And I would say it's for three reasons: carbon dioxide emissions, shortage of sand, and the introduction of mass timber. Now, you might be saying, that's crazy. I don't see any issues with concrete. In fact, you probably just see more and more concrete getting used. And at first glance, the demand for concrete is growing. Worldwide, over 10 billion tons of concrete is being produced each year, with the United States producing over 5 million tons itself. For reference, what is the scale? Because someone starts talking about 500 million tons, and what does that even mean, right? But for scale, China used more cement, okay, not talking concrete, more cement between 2011 and 2013 than the U.S. used in the entire 20th century. Let me rewind the tape there. In 3 years, China used as much cement as the U.S. used in the entire 20th century. Think about what the U.S. built in the 20th century. Hoover Dam, highway system, all the famous skyscrapers, all the infrastructure, all of that combined China did in 3 years. And from other things I read where they took other 3-year periods, not just 2011 to 2013, others in the 2000s. And every time they looked at those 3 years, it still was more than the United States produced in the 19th century. That is staggering. Okay. And as we see world population grow, urbanization continue, the International Energy Agency projects that cement production is expected to increase anywhere from 12 to 23% by 2050. So long story short is those numbers are going up. But what's the problem? Well, the cement sector, which is a critical ingredient of concrete, is the world's third largest industrial energy consumer and the second largest industrial emitter of carbon dioxide, accounting for 7% of the global emissions, according to the International Energy Agency. So 7%, single digits, doesn't really raise that much of a flag to some people at first. But think about it, 7%, it's of that material, right, of cement, of the cement industry. So when someone says industry, you tend to think of like the construction industry. So if they said the construction industry made up 10%, well, there's a lot that goes into the construction industry. Or if they said the transportation industry, it's a whole group of materials and processes and all that kind of stuff. But this is just saying cement alone, the cement sector is the second largest emitter of carbon dioxide at 7%. So that is a huge number there just by cement. And as most listeners of the show will know, concrete requires cement, sand, as well as coarse aggregate to make the product that we use in building. And the projected amounts of sand and gravel will likely jump from 35 gigatons per year at 2000, which was the 2011 levels, that was the data that I could get at the time, up to 82 gigatons per year by 2060. So we are on a big slope going upwards with the amount of sand and gravel being looked to be used in the future. Unfortunately, the two big problems there is that the current understanding of the majority of policymakers is that we need to start emitting less carbon dioxide. So we need to bring down that carbon dioxide number, and we are running out of sand, that thing that everyone's projecting we're going to need a lot more of. So that's the rub, right? We got to bring down emissions, and we have to bring down that sand, and we're probably projecting that they're both going to grow. The shortage of sand is not the only problem. The fact of the matter is that there's an environmental hazard due to the manner in which it's obtained. Okay, so the process removing can affect agriculture, water quality, air quality, you know, air pollution, other impacts to the environment. And while regulations can help lessen those impacts, some of this extraction and transport is illegal. It's unmonitored. In fact, in March, it was reported that North Korea illegally exported millions of dollars in sand from the Korean Bay to China in violations of UN sanctions. So not only are they going into the ocean and dredging up and who knows what wildlife, both plant life and aquatic life is getting ripped up. Is there like a whole ecosystem that's getting pulled up out of the ocean floor? But either way, that's happening. They're breaking UN sanctions on top of it, but it's to the tune of millions of dollars. And that's where I think it's good to go back and listen to that sand episode. There's quite a bit of shocking stuff that you'll find. So what can we do about it? Well, we might be able to track down who is illegally trading sand. A University of Texas postdoctoral student has recently published a paper stating that sand is a strong forensic marker. It reflects, so there's a unique pattern of rocks within a drainage basin where you would dredge things up, and that keeps a record. And what the gentleman that wrote the article said, and I'll just quote it here, "There is no reason why I couldn't take a core of concrete from an existing skyscraper and take that same compositional signature and tie it back to a source," says Zach Sickman. So that's interesting. They could take a core of concrete, look at the profile of the sand and be like, oh, hey, this is coming from a river in Colorado. So where did we get that sand from? We got it from XYZ supplier. Yeah, why are you getting sand from that river basin? You know, we're not allowed to dredge there. So, you know, is it happening less in the U.S.? Probably. It's probably more of an overseas issue, but I wouldn't be shocked if it is happening here locally. So if I'm illegally dredging sand, this article is probably going to make me a little nervous. And I'm just going to chalk that article up as interesting. The fact that we can now track down where sand is coming from. And we are just really learning faster and faster that we live in a world that you can't hide. There are cameras everywhere. There's better ways to track things, not just from a construction standpoint, but everything. Everything's on the record. So I think the bright light of the sun really helps us expose some nefarious things that might be going on. Let's be real, though. We need concrete, right? But I think the message I want to get across here is let's do it by not destroying the environment. Let's do things like let's reduce the amount of concrete that we use. Let's find better ways to produce it. Reduce emissions, use less energy, change the mix, less sand, less cement, alternative products. We've talked on the show about increasing fly ash in the mix, as well as hempcrete. And now I can add something that I just learned about recently in an article, which is non-fines concrete, NFC. Okay, not the National Football Conference or whatever that abbreviation means, which is just what it says. It's a concrete without fines, aka sands. Among the main advantages of NFC is less materials, higher thermal insulation value, lower shrinkage, and lower weight and density. It's mainly used for load-bearing, cast-in-place external walls of like single-family homes, multi-story housing, small retaining walls, or damp-proofing, what you'd think of as a basement slab, right, in a house. Some people might call it like a rat slab, but just basically a slab poured on grade. It would be used there. So it's not for everywhere. None of these products are for everywhere. Hempcrete has its place. Increased fly ash has its place. And, you know, you could use those things. Maybe we start replacing like the topping slabs that go on wood floors and podium construction. The name's escaping me right now. But maybe that gets changed. Other non-structural walls can use things like hempcrete. We can use non-fine concrete, non-fines concrete. And really, these are just kind of taking bites at the apple, right? Are the things that we can start replacing where we would just normally throw traditional concrete in there? Can we go with an alternative product? I think we are going to continue to see that. I think we'll continue to see that. Maybe start being spec'd on projects. I remember recently seeing a detail on a set of drawings that said to use the chipped out concrete to fill back in holes. And that was interesting. That's obviously a play at sustainability where we're reusing the concrete. So I can really see a place moving forward where we start seeing these alternate products get used over traditional concrete. And hopefully, like I said, it starts to take a bite of the apple. Now on to emissions. So we have all of these things going on, right? So we have a shortage of sand, which is putting pressure on concrete. We have the opportunity to make it better by offering alternative products. But we still have to deal with emissions, right? So a recent article came out that the owner of a cement plant in Florence, Colorado, had started design and engineering work with the goal of making the first U.S. facility to use carbon capture technology on a commercial scale. The company is Lafarge Holcim, H-O-L-C-I-M. I don't know if I'm pronouncing that right. And what happened was they received a $1.5 million grant from the U.S. Department of Energy to research and develop the system to capture and sequester the plant's carbon dioxide emissions. They're hoping to have this thing up and running by 2024. And I'm going to point out that there was also a bill filed in 2019 jointly by Democrat Michael Bennett and Republican Rob Portman to make it easier to raise funds for these projects. I only point this out to say that, okay, there's some bipartisan support there to make carbon capture and sequestration a reality. So potentially we might continue to see more of this. In Norway, there's a company that's looking to do the same thing. I want to say I posted it on LinkedIn. I want to say about 4 years ago, I remember this. And they just want to capture the CO2. But their thing is they're going to capture it. Everybody has to compress it, put it on a tanker, head out into the ocean and inject it offshore. Okay. The reason Colorado was the first one they chose was because there was a lot of geological formations where they could inject it. But I think about this, is this really a reasonable solution that we're going to capture this stuff, compress it, and shoot it in geological formations, or put it out on a tanker and put it into the ground? At the end of the day, I don't know if that's truly the answer. I think it might be what people are going to try, and it might help. Okay, but we certainly do need to start finding these alternative products and see if we can make them work. So when I started off, I said three things that was putting pressure on concrete. It was shortage of sand. It was the carbon emissions. And then the last thing I said was mass timber. There's plenty of stuff on this podcast. If you scroll back, you can find other episodes. Jeff Langlois. Oh my God, I'm drawing a blank right now. On, and I can see their faces, the two professors out at UMass. It'll come back to me. Give me a minute. There's just one that I did on mass timber. So Peggy Clouston and Alex Schreier. Thank you. My brain came back to me. So go back. You can listen and hear about all the stuff that's happening in mass timber. But in a simple sense, why I feel it's going to affect concrete is... A, it gets back to that bite at the apple. What is stuff that we're doing out of concrete that we can now do out of wood, and then we're just using less concrete, right? We don't even need to use a different type of concrete product. We can just straight use less of it. So we use less concrete, go with wood, and then there's this other thing happening, right, where they looked at using mass timber, which is fire rated, again, so we don't need that cementitious products that we might need. Wood absorbs carbon dioxide, right? So it takes in carbon dioxide and gives us back oxygen. So when we take a tree, it's like we're sequestering it in our building. We're using our building to sequester that carbon, because as long as that tree doesn't decompose and break down, the carbon dioxide does not go back out into the environment. So the thought is we use sustainable forestry, we take those trees, put them in our building, plant new trees, capture more carbon, and that cycle continues. So, but what's important is not only is it, you've got it, the wood being a negative and the concrete being a positive emissions, right? So maybe those are flipped, but you know what I mean? So we're concrete is putting out carbon and wood is taking away carbon dioxide. So you have that spread, right? The distance between the negative and the positive, and that becomes a big gap. So mass timber really seems like it has the potential to affect the carbon dioxide emissions. It reduces, it, you know, solves the problem with the sand and cement issue that goes with concrete. And we are seeing the code changes, and we are seeing more plants open, and we are seeing more buildings being built in the United States. They are being built more often. They are being built bigger. And I would venture to say that we're probably going to look at a more of like a hockey stick type curve happening with mass timber. So I'm interested to see how all this plays out. I think and hope you're interested to hear about this. I'll put links to the article about the carbon capture, the tracing of illegal sand, and the non-fine concretes in the show notes. You can go ahead and do a little research yourself, see what you think, see if you think I am correct or if I am crazy and there's going to be no dent in concrete and we're just going to keep plowing ahead. I think they're both possibilities, but I have a funny feeling in 5 years, I think it's going to be more like the bites at the apple. Right, we're going to see those bites at the apple happening. That will be mass timber and alternative products. Okay, tell me what you think. Hope you enjoyed the show. One, two.
bringing to the folks. Snoop Doggy Dogg and Dr. Dre is at the dough, ready to make an entrance, so back on up,
cause you know we're about to rip shit up.
Give me the microphone first so I can bust like a bubble. Compton and Long Beach together, now you know you in trouble. Ain't nothing but a G-thang, baby. Too low-def, nigga, so we're crazy.